palms down, and lets his dead fish hand be held.
"Betrothed," he grunts. "He wants us to get married?"
"That's what Cedric Azra said."
"He says a lot of things."
Five's face is red, the blush traveling all the way up into his scalp. I'm not sure if he's embarrassed, or angry, or some combination of the two.
"I didn't agree to that. You're a child."
Obviously I didn't agree either. You're a gross, murdering weirdo.
"Shut up,"
Five hisses, and for a second, I think that I've actually offended him. But then, I realize we're passing by the open entranceway of the observation deck. I can't help but slow my steps as we sneak by. The empty darkness of space I'd gotten used to has been replaced by the familiar, bright blue atmosphere of Earth. The Anubis is still making its descent. But already, the outline of civilization is visible. Roads boxing up green fields, tiny houses arranged into perfect suburbs. Dozens of Mogadorians have gathered to watch Earth approach, an excited energy in the air as they whisper to one another, probably talking about which swath of land they'll pillage first. Five leads me around the next corner and crashes right into two Mog warriors who are jogging towards the observation deck. The nearest one lifts a corner of his mouth in a disdainful sneer, eyeing us.
"What are you two doing?"
the Moog asks. In response, I draw myself up, trying to look as regal as possible. I fix the over-curious Moog with a cold stare. The Moog's sneer quickly fades as he remembers himself, or more likely, remembers that I'm not just some Lorian, but the blood of his beloved leader, and he looks down at the floor. He begins to mutter something apologetic when a metallic shink cuts him off. A needle-like blade extends from the leather contraption on Five's forearm. In a blur, Five drives the blade right through the first Moog's forehead, instantly turning him to ash. The other Moog's eyes widen in panic, and he tries to run. A delighted grin spreads across Five's face. Before the Moog can get even a few steps down the hall, Five's non-blade arm takes on a rubbery consistency and stretches after him. Five's arm snakes around the Moog's neck and then yanks him backwards so Five can finish him off with his blade. The whole thing is over in about 10 seconds.
"We were supposed to be acting normal,"
I say to Five in a loud whisper, mindful that we're not all that far from the crowded observation room. Five blinks at me, almost like he's not sure what just came over him. Carefully, he presses the blade back into its holster.
"I lost my cool, okay?"
Five anxiously rubs his hand across the stubble on top of his head.
"It doesn't matter now. We're almost there."
I stare at this unhinged monster standing in front of me. He gulps down a few deep breaths, his shoulders shaking, fists balled from the excitement. Minutes ago, he sounded almost fragile, rambling in the darkness of my room. He's broken, a total mess. I have to remind myself that he murdered 8 in order to squelch the swelling of sympathy I feel for him. Sympathy. Yes, but also fear. He flew off the handle with zero provocation and almost seemed happy killing those Moogs. This screwed-up, violent, cowardly traitor is my only real hope of getting off the Anubis. I shake my head. "Let's go," I sigh. Five nods, and we jog on, tossing out the whole hand-holding thing and just careening towards our destination. As we run, I notice Five clenching and unclenching his hands. They're both empty.
"How'd you do that with your arm?"
I ask him, thinking about those rubber and steel balls he used to change his skin in the lecture hall.
"I thought you needed to be touching something."
Five turns his head so his good eye is on me. He touches the fresh bandage over his face.
Losing an eye gave me some new, storage possibilities, he says.
Ugh, I reply, grossed out as I picture the rubber ball shoved into Five's eye socket. How'd you lose it anyway?
Marina,
he answers simply, no malice in his voice.
I had it coming.
I'm sure. We round the next corner, and the hallway opens up, the ceiling rising as we enter the huge docking bay. I can see crisp blue sky through the portholes, sunlight pouring across the dozens of docked Mogadorian scout vessels. Other than the ships, the docking bay is empty. The mechanics and crew must be on the observatory deck, gazing out upon the world they plan to conquer. We're so close. Hold on, I say. If we open the airlock, are we going to be sucked out right away?
We're in the atmosphere now, not space,
Five says impatiently. He leans over a nearby console, studying the interface.
It'll be windy. You're not going to chicken out, are you?
No, I say, looking around the docking bay. Do you think we could blow some of this stuff up? Maybe bring down the Anubis before it has a chance to do anything? Five turns to me, looking slightly impressed.
You have any explosive legacies?
No.
Me neither. Know how to make a bomb?
No.
Then we're going to have to settle for escaping,
Five says. Five hits a button on the console, and a thick metal door thuds into place behind us. It's the airlock, sturdy enough to keep the ship safe from the vacuum of space. It effectively seals us off from the rest of the ship.
That'll slow them down,
Five says, referring to the pursuers we don't yet have. Good thinking, I admit, as I peer through the small window on the airlock, expecting to see Moogs chasing us down at any moment. Five taps out a few more keystrokes, and with a hydraulic whine and a gust of chilled air, the docking bay doors at the far end of the room open up. The wind pulls at me and I let out a deep, relieved sigh. I reach into my dress and remove the Sithara stone, clutching it. Slowly, I walk towards the open dock, wondering what it'll be like to pitch myself into that open blue sky. Way better than life on the Anubis, that's for sure. So, I just hold the stone and fly? I ask, looking over my shoulder at Five.
Supposed to be how it works,
he answers.
Just imagine your body light as a feather, floating on air. That's how I learned to use my legacy anyway.
I glance towards the open air, the cloudless sky waiting for me. What if it doesn't work? Five starts towards me, sighing.
Come on, we'll go together.
You won't be going anywhere.
Cetricus Ross steps out from between two of the ships. I'm not sure if he's been there the whole time, waiting for us, or if he's just teleported into the room somehow. Either way, it doesn't matter. We're caught. Still in his human form, Cetricus Ross stands between us and the open docking bay, the wind gently blowing through his perfect brown hair, plucking at the lapels of his suit. He holds his golden staff, the Eye of Thalok, in one hand. Five puts a hand on my shoulder and tries to push me behind him. I shake him off. We face Cetricus Ross side by side.
Get out of our way, old man,
Five growls. He's trying to sound tough, but he can barely manage to meet Cetricus Ross's eyes.
I will not,
Cetricus Ross replies, his voice full of scorn and disappointment.
I expected this kind of behavior from you, Ella. You have only recently joined us, and it will take time to undo the brainwashing you endured at the hands of the guard. But Five, my boy, after everything I have done for you.
Shut up, Five says quietly, almost pleading. You talk and talk, but none of it's true.
Mine is the only truth,
Cetricus Ra counters sternly.
You will be punished for your insolence.
Five still can't bring himself to look directly at Cetricus Ra, but his shoulders rise up and down rapidly, just like in the hallway with the Moog warriors. Inside his chest, a low rumble starts to build. It reminds me of a tea kettle coming to a boil. I take a subtle step to the side, worried that Five might literally explode.
Enough of this inanity, children, Cetricus Ra says.
But his latest rebuke is partially drowned out by the rabid scream that tears loose from Five's lungs. And then he charges. At first, Five's bare feet make slapping sounds across the metal deck. But as he nears Cetricus Ra, his footfalls become metal clanging against metal, his externa changing his skin to match the floor. Cetricus Ra merely raises an eyebrow at Five, not impressed or intimidated in the least. I don't just stand around and watch. While Five charges in, I make a break for one of the nearby tool carts. If I can grab a wrench or any other object to charge with my drain-in, maybe I can recreate yesterday's lesson. Only this time, my target will be Cetricus Ra. That plan, along with whatever Five intended to do, gets scrapped when Cetricus Ra sweeps his arm from side to side. A wave of telekinetic force blasts across us, knocking me completely off my feet and scattering the nearby tools to the far wall. His telekinesis is so powerful that some of the ships even rock to the side, their shocks grinding and creaking. I land hard on my stomach and immediately roll over to reorient myself. Five was knocked into the air too, but caught himself with his flight legacy. He floats just a few yards from Cetricus Ra. Five's skin is no longer the dull gray of the docking bay floor. It has changed into a glistening chrome, like the ball bearing I know he carries around. So that must be jammed into his eye socket as well.
Stop at once,
Cetricus Ra warns, but Five is way past the point of listening. Five soars in towards Cetricus Ra, throwing big, looping punches with the intention of smashing his pretty human face. Cetricus Ra deflects the blows easily with his cane, although Five's sheer animalistic fury is enough to drive Cetricus Ra back towards the open docking bay doors. Their scuffle opens up a path for me. Let these two crazies duke it out. All I have to do is make a break for it, dive into the open blue sky, and hope the Sitharis stone does what Five said. Just when I start to make my move, I notice Cetricus Ra's eyes flash. I feel an invisible field of energy pass over me, almost like the pressure in the room has changed. As he's in the middle of throwing a punch, Five's skin turns back to normal. His fist crunches against Cetricus Ra's upraised cane. At the same moment, Five falls out of the air with a shout. It's just like at Dulcie Base. Cetricus Ra has created some kind of field that cancels legacies. He's an Eternus like me, and now I know that Cetricus Ra and I also share Draenen. His technique is different from anything I've been able to learn. It's like he's charged the molecules in the air around him, creating a radius where legacies are useless. Except it doesn't work on me. I can still feel my Draenen lurking within me, and I know that I could use my Eternus if I wanted. Somehow, I'm immune to Cetricus Ra's version of Draenen. Is it because we're related? Or is one of my legacies an immunity to Cetricus Ra? He said all that crap about our legacies coming randomly and Lorien being nothing but chaos. But what if he's wrong, and my legacies have been specifically chosen to destroy him. More important, does Cetricus Ra know that his power doesn't affect me? In that moment, Cetricus Ra isn't paying me any attention at all. He's completely focused on Five. I know I should make a break for it, but I find myself rooted in place. Even after everything he's done, can I really leave Five behind? Five is on his knees in front of Cetricus Ra, clutching his injured hand to his belly. Cetricus Ra's unimposing human form has grown by a few feet. He's taller and broader now, inflated in a way that is vaguely grotesque. He reaches down and palms Five's head into one unnaturally large hand.
All you needed to do was follow orders.
Cetricus Ra seethes at Five. He jerks Five's head back so he can look him in the face.
We could have walked into the sanctuary together if you'd only brought me that damned pendant. And now, this. You dare raise a hand against your beloved leader. You disgust me, boy.
I don't know what Cetricus Ra means by sanctuary, but I make a mental note of it. I also take a step towards him and Five, still torn between fleeing and helping, and uncertain of what I could even do in a fight against the Mogadorian ruler. Five's head is cocked at an awkward angle, so he can only gurgle in response to Cetricus Ra's ranting.
I should have known that no member of the guard could truly be salvaged,
Cetricus Ra continues.
You are my greatest failure, Five, but you will be my last.
Five cries out as Ra's hand tightens on his skull. My stomach turns over as I realize he's literally going to crush Five's head. I can't let that happen. With all the telekinetic force I can muster, I shove Cetricus Ra towards the open docking bay doors. His eyes widen in surprise as he stumbles backwards, the open air tugging at his fancy suit, which is now bulging at the seams from his inhuman growth spurt. Cetricus Ra loses his grip on Five's head, his nails scratching divots into his scalp. He manages to stop himself before I push him off the Anubis, and I can feel his telekinesis battle back against mine.
Ella, how?
He starts to ask, surprise mixing with frustration. But then Five is charging at him, his forearm blade extended.
Die!
Five bellows. Cetricus Ra tries to step aside, but can't entirely avoid Five. The blade plunges into his shoulder. I scream as a piercing jolt of pain courses through me. A hole in my shoulder opens up, warm blood pouring down my front. I stagger against one of the nearby ships, clutching the wound, trying to stop the bleeding with my fingers. Five recoils from Cetricus Ra, his eyes wide. The Mogadorian looks unharmed. Cetricus Ra smiles as Five turns to gape at me. I'm run through right where he should have stabbed Cetricus Ra.
Now look what you did,
Cetricus Ra chides. The Mogadorian charm, I realize, even as I start to feel faint. Any damage done to Cetricus Ra is instead done to me. Five looks horrified by what he's done. Before he can react, Cetricus Ra picks him up by the throat and slams the back of his head violently against the hull of the nearest ship. He does this again and again until Five's body is limp. Then, callously, Cetricus Ra tosses his unconscious body out the open doors of the Anubis. I try to reach Five with my telekinesis, but I'm too weak. His body plummets out of sight, towards the earth below. I collapse to the floor, blood seeping through my fingers. All the strength has gone out of me. I won't be escaping from the Anubis today. My grandfather has won. Cetricus Ross stands over me.